Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Unexpected Podcast. Today we're going to do the second installation of how to play and how to beat Easterlings, I guess it is. We're going to have Matt bring his proven Articon, Nova, just Easterling list he's played for the past while against Evan's anti-Easterling list. So, as always, we have Matt, Evan, myself, and Devin all from across the globe. And yeah. Let's get into
Just curious, Rainier, what do you mean by he's going to play him?
it. Oh, good question. Thanks, Devin. So by that, we're going to
Bad
have
rap.
a what if battle, basically. We're going to have a picture for those on the pod, for those listening on Spotify or Apple. I'm sorry, but we're going to have a picture of a battle mat. We're going to have a scenario that we're going to choose. They're going to veto it, and they're going to play a hypothetical what like battle on that.
Yeah, and Rainier, I assume this map will also be posted on our Facebook page as well. So if people are listening, hopefully, if we get it up in time as we release the podcast, you should be able to listen. And if you ever need to reference the map because you're confused about what's going on, the map should be up there. So even if you're listening, this should still be helpful to you.
For sure, for sure. Okay, now let's first get into our armies. So the points, if you guys can tell us the points of your army and what they entail, let's go with Matt, the Easterling champion first.
Right. So we are doing 750 point lists, and this list is going to be close to the list that I used on the last podcast, but not necessarily going to be identical because I had lost the piece of paper where I'd written that previous list. But in any case, it's going to be broadly similar. So I have in the first warband, I have the Dragon Emperor, of course. And with him, he has 14 Black Dragon Pike Shield friends. And he's got four cataphracts, Black Dragon cataphracts, one of which has a drum, which I think is a slight change from last time. I think I went up by an additional cataphract here. Warband number two, I have Brogir the Conjurer. He has three Dragon Cult Acolytes. He has three Easterling Warriors with bow. And then he has five Easterling warriors with pike and shield. So that puts together a little small mini shield wall if he needs to fight on his own of six guys in front, three bowmen, three dragon called acolytes, and five pike and Brogir himself with a spear behind if they need to break out and fight by themselves. And then we've got Rutabi, General of the Dragon Legion, as the third warband, and Rutabi has with her two Dragon Cult acolytes, three warriors with shield to make up a front line, and five with pike. And I think when I had pointed or kind of pointed this all out, I think I've got about a if you throw the Dragon Emperor in, you've got a 15 or 16 figure wide battle line here with either two or three pikes behind it across the entire width. Plus, you have the cavalry that can hold a flank one way or the other. So that is the list.
Well, that's good. Now for our viewers, because this is like a focus on Easterlings, what was your mindset behind choosing that? Like, what's your mindset going in?
So the mindset is we've got the three standard heroes that I think people have settled on, the Dragon Emperor, Brogir, and Rutabi, and not necessarily in that order. And then at 750 points, you can choose whether or not you want to either add in more guys or add in a Dragon Knight. I went, or some people add in a captain. I went with just more guys because I had lots of slots and I wanted to fill this out. I ended up with a 42 model army, which is a decent number of figures to have at 750 points, along with two fight six heroes, one of which is really scary and a pretty good caster.
Yeah, you got all the named ones, and what, that's six acolytes too, right?
Yeah, there's six acolytes in this list, I think. Six or five? Five acolytes. Five acolytes in this list.
Yeah, no, it's not worth it. Let's end the episode right now.
Yep. Oh, forget it. I'll come in again.
Okay, so that's what we have for Matt at 750. You said 42 models, right?
Yep.
And then Evan, what did you build specifically to counter? You, of course, Evan did not know what list Matt was going to have, but I assume knowing
well, the he knew it was going to be a Dragon Emperor list because that was the point of the last episode build. He just didn't know exactly what I was going to have in it, but he could probably guess.
Yes, and
just to screw them.
Yeah,
can you take Kahul in that list?
Not in.
I don't think you can.
Yeah, not in the Legion. No,
you could have taken basic Easterlings and just lost your 50 free points of Black Dragons.
Yeah, well, and it's really sad. Kahul is now like the girl that used to be hot and now nobody wants to take to the dance and is just kind of like sitting over on the side going, "What about me?"
To be fair, I don't think Kahul was ever hot. I think Kahul was just like
the only other option.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
Kahul was moderately the attractive. You had, and then it's like moving from a very rural school where your options are extremely limited, and then just like going to like a 3,000 person high school, and it's like, yeah, I'm not doing that anymore. Anyways, moving on to my list. So
dating on the podcast.
Right. Yeah.
The people on the podcast, I don't think you should be taking dating lessons from any of us, just as a warning.
Somebody flying on a fell beast with like a masked Easterling face, we suggest do not date that person.
Swipe to the side.
Okay, no, that's okay. Then you get the sibling with the big old Mickey Mouse. Here we go.
Yeah.
Okay, what did you bring, Evan?
Okay. So I brought a Lothlorien Numenor list, which definitely has a lot of aspects of it that are made with Easterlings in mind. However, I'd argue that this list is perfectly functional outside of just countering Easterlings, and I'd say it's actually quite a powerful list. But specifically, there's a bunch of aspects for Easterlings. So starting off with a Lothlorien contingent, our leader is Galadriel. She's got two Galadrim knights with bows and shields, three normal Galadrim with bows and spears, eight Galadrim warriors with shields, four guards of the Galadrim court, and one Wood Elf Sentinel. So that's basically, I think that's, yeah, 18 models in my 18 models plus Galadriel in my elf contingent. And then from Numenor, I picked up Isildur on horse with shield and the ring. And he's got five warriors of Numenor with bows and spears, eight with shields, one with spear and banner, and one with just spear. And then the final warband is a captain of Numenor on horse with lance and shield. And he's got a warrior of Numenor with bow and spear and one warrior of Numenor with just spear. So all in all, there are 12 bows in total. Half of them are elves. Half of them are Numenorians. I have my leader is Galadriel. There's 38 models. 8 points of might and some solid heroes in there as well. So the thought process of this list is that Dad needs to play super, super careful with basically all of his heroes, because the combination of Galadriel, Isildur, and a captain on horse with lance can basically take out any of them in one shot. So if he ever like not even exposes them, but just puts them into combat and I win a heroic move roll off, he is in a huge amount of trouble with his heroes. So he needs to play very cagey. And the rest of my army I created with a majority defense six frontline, with either Numenor spears with strength four behind, or Galadrim pikemen with fight six behind. So either of those options, I'd say, does quite well against the Easterlings. The strength four, obviously, killing them a lot easier than they kill you, and the fight six being able to reliably win against them. All in all, it's slightly smaller, four models smaller, but in combat, I'd say it does a bit better, and it's very good at shutting down their heroes.
And only just I had Kamul.
If only you had Kamul, though. I mean, I have fight six guys, so you probably wouldn't have enjoyed that either. But yes, as a warning, I had the same thing that happened to Dad happened to me, so I lost the list. So this is the best recreation I could make of it from my memory. I think both of us got pretty close to what we made last time. So just note that if we used our original lists from the previous podcast, nothing would really change about this mashup. So it's going to be authentic enough.
Nah, typical Iverson excuses. Guys, they're probably 36 points up. Just joking.
I actually made a 1,000-point list. You got me.
Yeah. We're like, wait, how's Sauron on the Last Alliance army? Like, what is this?
Fortunately, I also made a 1,000-point list. So. Yeah,
I did actually forget to mention that in the fourth warband of my army, there's a Smaug. So other than that, it's pretty much exactly the same as what I said in the last podcast.
Okay, so let's look at the hero breakdown. So Matt, you have Emperor Rutabi Borgir, right?
Right.
And then Evan, you have Isildur with a ring and a horse. You have a captain with a lance and a horse, and you have Galadriel. And to be specific, it's the Galadriel from the Lothlorien list.
Yes, the girl walking around with her fists.
Perfect, sounds good. So that's what we got, guys. And then a real good matchup, actually, I think it is. You have the defense six horde of the Easterlings with some throwies. And then you have the fight six selective with strength four Numenor. So it's going to be a good matchup, guys.
All righty. So do we want to put the board up next?
Yeah, we'll put the board up and then we'll talk about the three scenarios you guys are going to veto from.
All right. One second. I'm just going to screen share the board here. And remember, if you are listening, the board will be posted on the Facebook page at some point, so you will be able to see this.
All right. So why don't I talk through this board? Because this was from sort of a tournament I recently played in at Paths of the Dead in Marlborough, Massachusetts. So this is a pretty standard Easterling type board. I'm going to feel kind of at home here. As we're looking at this board, I'm going to just arbitrarily define the side that's on the far side from me as north, and the side that's closest to me as south, or at least closest to where, you know, somebody would be sitting in a chair. There's a side to this board. So, If we start on the north, in the northeast corner of the board, there's a cluster of like three largest tents that kind of make up the northeast corner of the board. And then the northeast corner of the board is kind of walled off by a water feature that's maybe about 2 feet long and goes kind of diagonally from the northern center of the board to the eastern center of the board. It has some wider areas that are maybe 4 inches wide, and then some narrow areas that are probably an inch wide, and that stuff would all be shallow water. But the northeastern corner of the board has kind of a water feature that protects it there. Then there are there's about a half dozen kind of large buildings, multi-story buildings with flat roofs that somebody could climb up onto and shoot from. And they're scattered running from the northwest corner of the board where there's one. And then there's kind of an uneven line of these things that stretches through the middle of the board down to the southeast corner of the board. There are two fairly large buildings, one just north of the center of the board and the other just south of the center of the board. So they, you know, if it's fighting in the middle of the board, there's going to be some impact to those. And then on the western side of the board, on the other side of those buildings, there's a couple of like, you know, tent awnings and, you know, some small little terrain pieces that are scattered there. There's like four of them, but it's pretty much open on the western side of the board. So basically you've got tents in the northeast screened off by a water feature, although you can get around that water feature on you know, kind of either end of it, or just by going over it if you want to spend a little extra time. And then you've got buildings that kind of stretch across the center of the board from the northwest to the southeast, and then kind of in pretty much open area in the kind of southeastern corner of the board there. That's what we got.
Looks a setup. Looks like a good, like, yeah, like you said, easterling, like urban type-esque. There's even the houses are there. There are enough buildings where you could kind of get like a pike block or an elf slash numenor block choke points basically going on.
Yeah, it's, I'm counting on the home field advantage here.
Yeah. I mean, Dev and I already made the rules. If you're like 20 inches away from any of those buildings, you get plus one rerolls.
Yeah. I'll take it.
Okay, scenarios. I guess, Devin, you and I will say what scenario we came up with, right? And then they get the veto.
But we also had Alisher, who was not able to make it onto this actual recording because he had a flight, but he picked capture and control as his scenario.
Nice. So we have capture and control. I'll say breakthrough. There's another one.
Okay.
All right. Honestly, would have wanted to play a maelstrom style scenario, but I don't know how exactly we would illustrate that.
We'd have to roll, physically rolling
for it and see.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we can talk through the strategy in setting it up and how we would do it. We could even roll for warbands and just see how they come on. But in any case, if you want to pick a maelstrom one, I think that's fair game, Dev.
Okay, I was going to say hold ground. But I imagine you guys.
I like that, though. That sounds like a fun one, to be honest.
Hold ground.
Okay.
All right.
Just so our viewers understand, we're probably not going much further than turn two on these type of things, obviously.
Shall we roll to see who vetoes first?
Should roll to see who vetoes first. Do you have a die there, Evan?
I do have a die here.
All right. I also have a die. All right. So
I rolled a 3.
I rolled a 2, so I think I have to veto first, right? The way the rules work.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's the way you're supposed to do it. I used to roll that the high die vetoes first, and then somebody corrected me, and we actually looked at the rule book, and the rule book says that the low die has to veto first on the theory.
Is it common knowledge that people understand what the veto system is?
Yeah, I think we should explain that.
All right, fair enough.
I think, didn't we do an episode on the veto system, though?
Yes, but not everybody has listened to every
episode. Listen to the episode. Come on. All right. We have an episode on the veto system.
You have to record
Give us more watch time. Come on.
All right, so brief explanation of the veto system. The way the veto system works is someone selects a pool of scenarios, of three scenarios. They're preset pools that you could roll from in the book. My preference actually is to use those preset pools because they've ordered the scenarios by type. So, you know, all the maelstrom ones are in one, all the objective ones are in another, that type of thing. So, you know, once a pool is selected, you're guaranteed to get like some sort of objective scenario, but you can, you know, tweak which one you want. And then other times TOs will just, you know, put together a group of scenarios, however they want to, a group of three scenarios. And then each player rolls a die. Whoever, if you follow the strictures in the match play guide, whoever rolls lowest vetoes one of those scenarios, the other person vetoes one of the two remaining scenarios. And the third remaining scenario, the one that neither player vetoed, is the one that you actually play. So that's what we're doing now. I have rolled lower and lost this particular roll off to see which scenario we're going to play. So I need to veto first. So Let me talk through my thought process here. Breakthrough is, let's see here. Let's talk through capture and control. Capture and control. We have five objectives. One that is dead set in the center, and then four that are kind of laid out in cardinal directions around that center, each 12 inches away. There's an objective on each of those points, and whoever stands on it last is the one who owns it. So they can flip back and forth. And as far as victory points go, you at the end of the game, whoever has, if the objective has flipped to your side, you get 2 points for it. There's no points for anybody standing next to it. It's just whoever happens to have it flipped to their side gets 2 points. You get 1 point for wounding the enemy's leader, and you get 1 point for break. So it's all about the objectives, pretty much. So that's capture and control. Let's find breakthrough. All right. So breakthrough has a similar arrangement of objectives. There is no central objective, but the other four objectives kind of scattered around in those four cardinal directions are both there. So you end up with two objectives on the center line, one to the left, one to the right, one objective that's kind of behind the behind one side's front line, and the other is behind the other side's front line in the center. The points are different. So for the objectives that are behind your front line, you only get 1 point if you own that. But the other player gets either 4 points if he has exclusive control of the objective that's on the far side, the one that he's trying to get to behind your lines. If he's got a model on it and there's none of your models within 3 inches, he gets 4 victory points. And if he has more models, he gets 2 victory points. And then for the two side objectives, they work the same way, where if you get exclusive control, you get more victory points. It's 2 victory points to whoever has exclusive control of the side ones. 1 victory point if you've just got more models. And then you get 1 point for breaking your opponent. You get 1 point for wounding the leader, and 2 points if you kill the enemy's leader. So slightly less emphasis on the objectives, but the objectives are still the lion's share of the points. And what you really want to do is clear your opponent away from the far objective. Okay, so that's breakthrough. And then hold ground's an old stalwart. Hold ground is Maelstrom of Battle deployment, so we can have warbands coming on any place around the board edge using the kind of the random deployment system that hold ground has. And let's see, as far as victory points go, you get 3 victory points. So there's a center objective, just place dead center in the middle of the board. Whoever has more models near the center objective gets 3 points. If you have twice as many, you get 5. If you have 3 times as many, you have 7, and you get 1 victory point for wounding the enemy's leader, 2 for killing him, 1 victory point for breaking your opponent, 3 if you remain unbroken. So those are the 3 scenarios. So how do I want to approach this? So we have armies that are roughly equal in size. He has more shooting. He has blinding light. He has magic, and he has a ring that can really kind of mess with the Dragon Emperor. And I think given this, I mean, what he doesn't have is a whole bunch of mobility. I mean, he's got Isildur on the horse. Of course, once Isildur gets off the horse, then he can't move around nearly as effectively. He also has a march with a captain with not a lot of folks in his warband. I almost wonder whether hold ground is something that I might want to play with here. I have my drum that is accompanying the lion's share of my army, which is the big emperor warband, and can also kind of dash around and help other folks. So I actually wonder if whole ground would be helpful for me, since I can kind of repeatedly march. All right, so I'm going to put a pin in that, and I'm going to consider the other scenarios. So, which are actually, you know, quite similar in that they both have the objective arrangement here, and both have 24-inch deployments. So we're starting on the center line, which is probably what I want, because what I don't want to do is I don't necessarily want to have a long approach march here. So thinking about how this would work, and thinking about, so part of it kind of depends where those north and south objective markers go. Are the north and south objective markers going to end up on top of one of these houses?
No, or, I think they're going to end up relatively close to the houses,
though. Close to, but not on top of a house.
Yeah. Looking from my angle, it doesn't look like they're going to end up on top.
Yeah, I think that's right. So interesting. I think. All right, I'm going to keep hold ground in play because I think that's going to be kind of an interesting scenario to deal with. And I do have a cavalry contingent, although not a mounted hero. So I, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to veto capture and control, and I'm going to keep break. Well, sorry. Now I'm thinking about this. Yeah. I'm going to veto capture and control. And the reason I'm going to veto capture and control is because I don't want to be pinned down to a central objective. I want to keep the flexibility to deploy the emperor on one side or the other. Depending on where Isildur goes, because if Isildur deploys kind of on one flank or in the center, I may want to put the emperor on the other flank, or screen him off. And I don't want to have to commit my army to fighting in the center. I'd rather have the capability to fight on one side or the other. All right. So that's my thinking. I'm going to veto capture and control.
All right. So I have whole ground and breakthrough.
Yep.
To pick. Okay. So, I dislike hold ground for the same reason that Dad likes hold ground, in that he does not need to spend resources to move 9 inches to get to the center. And in order for me to match him to get to the center, I'm going to need to burn a ton of resources, and then get into combat with probably either 6 or 5, depending on if I channel Binding Light, might, compared to his 8, which can also be amplified by Rutabi. And I don't like that fight as well, especially because how many cavalry models do you have? 3?
I have 4.
4, okay. So he has a larger cavalry contingent than me, so he can either use it to screen off the large number of choke points that there are, either forcing me to burn more resources on heroic combats or giving me a bit of a challenge getting into the center before he does. So with that in mind, I am going to pick breakthrough. And I think breakthrough actually makes for a very interesting scenario, though I do have a question to pose because I'm not super versed on objective rules. Are objectives cylindrical in nature when you measure range, or do you measure from the objective? So as in,
you have to measure up slopes.
Up slopes, okay.
Yeah.
So that's going to make this significantly harder for me. I'll see what I can do about that. But yes, we are playing Breakthrough.
All right, so we're playing Breakthrough. And let's see. I wonder if. Okay, we can annotate these things. Let me see if I can actually do this, because what I figured we'd try and do is kind of at least do a rough estimate of where these objectives were, so we could put them on. Let me see if I can figure out how to do this. Let's see. Okay.
Do you see this?
Yeah, I can see
that. So that looks like where one of the objectives would be for those of you at home. That's
really?
Well, this is Breakthrough, right?
So yeah, this is
here,
Breakthrough.
One here, one back there, and then one probably in between these buildings here. It might be a little bit more this way.
Yeah, your center of the board is, I mean, some of this is kind of odd perspective at the table. Your center of the board is kind of mentally in a different place than where I had it, but I'm happy to go with those. That's fine.
Well, my center of the board was roughly here.
Yeah, okay.
Blame the guy who took the picture.
Yeah, exactly. That's entirely possible based on this perspective. So there, all right, so we'll go with that. That's good enough.
That is the rough placement of our objectives. So yep. Just before here, how about we roll sides, and then maybe what Rainier and Devin can do is they can do like a preliminary analysis, and then we can sort of talk through our first couple of turns. So, Dad, let's both roll to see who deploys on what side.
All right.
I got a 2.
I have a 5. Okay. All right. So I'm gonna be thinking about this while Rainier and Devin talk through their analysis. And while I'm thinking about this, I'm desperately hoping that they come up with a brilliant plan that I can just say is my own and take.
All right, Devin, do you want to talk about the scenario more so? Then I'll talk about the matchup, maybe.
Okay. So admittedly, this scenario, funny enough, me and Matt played it on the last tournament round, and I was like kind of unfamiliar with how to operate it. So I don't think I'll do a lot better after only one game of it. But you want me to talk about how what Evan should play it, or?
Well, basically, I don't think I've ever played the scenario. So
all right.
That's my way of saying, how about you explain it, Devin?
Yeah. Well, they explain the scenario.
Yeah.
So
matchup style, who do you think's going in with the upper hand?
And how should we play it? I mean, I think that's what Evan's trying to get at, is you guys talk through how you think we should play it, and then we're going to go and either accept your suggestions or politely decline them.
Well, as a man who's almost never played the East Wings very much in the current meta, and, you know, never played this scenario, I'll go for it. So in a lot of scenarios like this, and I'm just going to spitball based on scenarios I know, I tend to not want to stretch myself out, and I tend to ignore one part of the board. So I think to myself, like, all right, I'm going to just go for 3 of these objectives. Of course, Breakthrough sort of forces your hand onto the far one. And I'm just going to play it like that. And I'm not even going to bother. So here in this matchup, if I was Matt, I would actually probably want to take the one in the water. Only I forgot how many cav models he has, but it's
F4.
So even from that perspective, I mean, I don't know that I want to trudge a whole army up the center, but depending on what direction I'm going, and I'm assuming I'm coming from my perspective down southeast to up north west. I guess I can flip. What direction are we playing the board? Can flip this any way I want
so to? No, actually, I think we are.
Because we're assuming that
Dad, you won the roll off. How about you pick a side? And okay. Then it will be easier for them to analyze when they know which sides we're on.
So that's fair. Okay, so I'm going to pick a side, and I'm going to pick I'm going to pick the south side.
The south side was not an option. Because I'd want that water to my back.
Whether it's an option or not, I have chosen
the south side.
The south side. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm assuming, frankly, that it's not. Because I don't know. So
my assumption is Evan's going to avoid the water. So I'm gonna then personally.
Elves don't like water. They're like cats.
Yeah. I mean, I know the knocking down E-strings in the water is a thing, but like, he doesn't have any cav models. He doesn't have anything that knocks.
I have two cav models plus a captain on horse and a Sildor.
Oh, yeah,
which
yeah,
is not which is not as much as what Dad has, but it is still a well. Technically, it's the same with heroes.
I'm just like, if you fight in the water, Tremor is going to cause you a lot of problems.
That is true.
So I'm personally in my head thinking, okay, objective on this east side is pretty much my easiest one. Isildur is coming off that horse most likely. If you apply enough pressure, he'll want to put that ring on. Or if he has an opportunity. So yeah, that's how I would end up playing the game, to just totally destroy my opponent while focusing on the southern, eastern, northern half. And then I think the buildings give plenty of, you know, methods to block off any advance to my southern objective. I mean, just because you have more troops by like 8, right? Like how many?
It's a difference of 4.
4. Okay. So not as extreme. Your defenses right. are Easterlings are slightly more defensive, but not by a ton. Other than the phalanx rule in a tight space. But yeah, I mean that's the initial. I mean, I can keep going, but I don't want to take up all your time for your own like actual placement. But that's how I tend to play a scenario like this. And then I have my cavalry or some units, maybe acolytes, I don't know, but like positioned in such a way where after about the hour mark, I would then shift to get that last objective. But I usually wait until that point, and I just make sure I hold my 3 while destroying my opponent. So, but that's just the basics of the scenario. And that's kind of barely considering the armies and their strong suits and such. But
other than now that, you deploy 24. What's the deployment? 12 inches?
I'm assuming no,
it's 24 inch deployment. So yeah. We both deploy to the center line.
Yeah. So I just, my assumption would be Evan would be positioning himself not in the water. So that means I would take that. But and hell, if you actually took it really solidly enough, if like that water is to your back and you obviously clearly have it, then I'd start positioning for the west side one, since it's, you know, I only need one model to hold it. But like I said, I don't play the East Wings, don't play this scenario too much, but that's my initial thought. And that's just only analyzing, obviously, from Matt's perspective. So from Evan's, I'd think about other stuff. But
yeah, I think, I don't know, I'm in the same boat. Like, I don't play either, really, especially Legion. I am painting them right now, but I would say, yeah, I think Evan needs to play it more aggressive than Matt. Matt has the luxury of having a few bows and a few throwing weapons. So in the aspect of like the game taking its time, I can see Matt having more an advantage if he plays it defensively, because.
Well, Evan's got 12 bows.
I don't think his bows are, I mean, he might deploy back, but I don't think he's going to give you that much ground.
No, he still needs to kill a roll of 6 to kill anything.
I mean, you're one drum movement away from getting in. Like, you'll close in the bows so quickly that I don't really think his bows matter that much. Other than it forces us to be aggressive. If that's what you're saying, is that you can't sit back and shout at him, then yes, I agree. But I don't
know. I love how this has turned into us. Us versus Evan.
No,
I get you though, because if Evan stays back and shoots, you kind of have the advantage to just throw everything at him, cause some chaos with magic, blah blah blah. Yes, maybe the Emperor will be killed eventually, but the game will end with you pushing him back and having more of the objectives. So I'm more curious to see what Evan does, because I think Matt has more of an opportunity to kind of like, because he has the drum, he has all the movement, choose what he wants to do based off that. We'll see.
All right. So all right.
So I owe you a warband, don't I?
Yes, you do.
All right.
So you want to just like mark the general.
Yeah, that's what I'll do.
That warband.
So before I do this, I guess we should talk a little bit of a terrain discussion here, at least what impacts deployment. What really impacts deployment is, so we've got basically We've got a right hand objective that's in the middle of a pond, or at least in the far side of a significant pond there. And we've got on my side of the board, we've got a rearward objective, between two buildings. And then we've got a left hand objective that's on the center line. And between the center of the board and that left hand objective is a significant building. It's like a three-story building. It's maybe about 6 inches on a side. And it really divides the center of the board. So that the left-hand objective is kind of on the west side of that building. And then, there's kind of a central corridor between the, there's kind of a central corridor between that pond in which the right-hand objective sits and this building. So what that does is it creates two corridors on the map, that building does. One in the center, which kind of is the corridor that leads from the expensive objective I'm trying to protect in my rear to the expensive objective I'm trying to take in Evan's rear, and kind of the left-hand side of the board. And so I think I'm going to do the best I can to make use of that. So so Rutabi's warband is going to deploy first. And Rutabi is going to deploy all of her frontline troops basically in the center, probably somewhat along here. So what Rutabi's frontline is going to do is cover most of that central corridor. And that's going to be, about, I think she's got maybe about seven figures wide there. That she can cover with some pikemen. And there's going to be a one figure wide gap between that end of that, the western end of my battle line there, and that big building in the middle. And Rutabi is going to sit a little ways back from the center, in a position where Rutabi can either come forward to support the end of that battle line with her flank secured by the building. Or if she wants to, she can run around behind that building and go to the left-hand channel. And in either way, she's not going to be in a position where she can kind of be compelled forward of the battle line. The worst that's going to happen to her, she'll be about 3 inches back. So the worst that's going to happen to her is that she'll be compelled, into that gap. That's where we are going to set up. And I think also, what I would probably do at this point is I would deploy the dragon called acolytes, the two dragon called acolytes that Rutabi has, on the right hand side, and the shieldmen kind of on the left hand side there, with some pikes behind. So that's the plan. That's my first warband. I'm gonna cover that center and keep Evan from kind of like running right into the middle there.
Cool. So, with him going basically exactly where I expected him to go, which is right up in the center in order to rush me as quickly as possible, I have a couple of options here. And because I want to keep those options open for as long as I can and see as much of his army before I choose where to go, I'm going to deploy my captain's warband, because that warband only has the captain and two models. So I can put that down, and then I can see where the remainder of the army goes. Using that, I can react a bit better. So I'm fairly sure this is just 24-inch deployment, right? You don't roll randomly to see whether you deploy within 12 inches of the center or not?
I don't believe so. Hang on a second, and I can
double check. Yeah, because capture and control, I think, does that.
Yeah, I think that's a thing in capture and control. Breakthrough, starting positions. Nope, none of that stuff. Anywhere within 24 inches of your board edge.
So then that makes it pretty obvious what I'm going to do. Basically, I'm going to deploy the captain's warband relatively near my back objective. So my two warriors are going to go right around the objective. And then my captain is probably going to go a little bit further, but effectively my first warband is going to go directly on top of that objective. The captain will be about 10 inches away behind the river. So effectively his threat range is present, though it probably won't matter too much, but he won't be able to be engaged on the first turn by any models. So he's pretty much safe from that. So that is my first warband.
That's your first warband. Okay. So
my second warband is going to be Brogir's warband. And Brogir is going to deploy probably along the lines of right about here for the front line. And again, this time actually probably with no gap. And Brogir is going, to hang out back again behind the house, peeking around the edge. And this line will go out and it may have to be refused somewhat to stay within 6 inches of Brogir. So basically I'm putting a front line out on the other side of the house in a place where I can contest that left-hand objective. So at this point I've got a small battle line to the right of that central building and a battle line to the left of that central building, and contesting the left objective here, there with Rutabi in a position where she can flex either way and Brogir in a position where he can flex either way, behind the house.
Okay. So, with that deployment done, now is when I really need to make the choice about where I want to fight and in what terrain I want to fight him, because he will have to come to me because I outshoot him by a decent amount. So the real question is, how do I fight him in a way I want to fight him whilst also being able to get to the objectives in a reasonable amount of time, before the time limit of the scenario ends? And there's a couple of options for that, but I think the safest place to deploy while still being able to effectively contest the objectives is behind the river near those three tents. And there is a concern that this particular position isn't overly aggressive, which means I'm going to be playing from a slight deficit in the early game, and it's going to be up to me to make that back. But I think that this is probably going to be the optimal choice, because if I deploy right in his face, I either have to split up to fight the two separate warbands or cede the western objective almost entirely, and also have a river between the main part of my battle line and both of the northern objective and the eastern objective. So really, if I deploy in the center, I am not contesting any objectives, and it's really down to me to get to them. While if I deploy in the northeast corner, I will be at least contesting two objectives, and I will also be in a well-fortified position and either have to force him to go around, in which case I can push through the river to get at some of the back objectives, or force him to go straight through the river, which slows him down a little bit, takes a chunk out of his maneuverability, which is very good because he has the drum. So I want to have him moving as little as humanly possible. So I am going to deploy. Really doesn't matter which warband I do, because both he and I know that most likely the other warband is going to go there too. But I am going to deploy my Isildur warband in this gap over here, and basically I'm going to deploy them in a way so they're spread out, so if I wish to deploy Galadriel's warbands, near them as well, which I am most likely going to do. They're spread out so the elves and the Numenoreans can work together in a fight. So there's one spear supporting the other, basically.
All right.
So that is my Isildur's warband.
That is Isildur's warband. And just out of curiosity, where is Isildur?
So Isildur is currently sitting behind the lines, but I've left a gap at the edge of the lines for both tents. So if you imagine my models are all in the middle there, and then both tents are on the ends, there's a gap for a cav base to fit through either way, but he's behind the lines.
All right, so you've got a tent anchoring either side of Isildur's warband there. You know, your problem is, Evan, you're two tents.
Very funny, Dan.
Sorry, I'm a dad. I was constitutionally required to make that joke.
You're going to start making those jokes soon, Rainier, and
that's right.
When those your child gets old enough, they're going to hate you.
For sure.
All right.
Well, just so you're aware, I might be pretty much out of time. However, just based on the fact that Matt completely ignored my battle plan and did like the opposite, I'm going to vote you lost.
All right, fair enough. All right, so I have one more warband to put out, which is obviously the Emperor. The Emperor has three contingents. So based on where Isildur... So the original plan was, if Evan was going to try and fight me toe-to-toe, was to keep the Emperor kind of behind the building that bisects my battle line. And whichever way the Isildur went, the Emperor was going to go the other way. Evan has basically committed to the right, Isildur to the right-hand side. And I suspect if he's deploying over there, that that's where his army is going to be. So the left-hand side isn't particularly important. So I think there are going to be some black dragons that start over here, but not many. The bulk of the black dragons will end up starting, and probably actually those black dragons will end up having to start a little ways back to stay within 6 inches of the Emperor. But the bulk of the black dragons are going to start on the right. The Emperor is going to kind of start on the right by Rutabi here, somewhere in the backfield. And then we've got the cavalry contingent of the four and the drum of the four or three cataphracts and the drummer that are going to stay in the back to make sure that they can get and probably make sure that they can get as many of the black dragons on the right as possible. The Emperor, obviously the cav themselves, and probably the entirety of Bergir's warband. And that's going to be the determination of where they're going to start to try and get basically the left-hand side of my force moving be able to, you know, kind of get some marches and some extra distance out of that first turn. And then we'll talk about kind of where they go on the first turn. All right. So Evan, you've got another warband that you need to put up here.
So this is the final warband, and it's going to be Galadriel, and she's basically going to pop up. She is going to do no such thing because I just, for some reason, canceled my, there we go. Got it back. She is going to pop up basically over here, as in, this looks like a very wonky sandwich, but basically it's there. The two warbands are basically deploying together with the elves and the Numenorean supporting each other. Galadriel is, she is going to be towards behind the lines for now, I'd say, but that can change because Dad's offensive pressure isn't, or not his offensive pressure in the form of shooting isn't extensive, so she doesn't have to stay super safe. And then the real question is, how do I commit my cavalry? So what I'm going to do is, in order to have him make a choice with his cavalry, I'm going to put one of my cav models over here and one of my cav models over here. Now I'm second guessing myself.
It's the best person to second guess. No, actually,
what I am going to do is I am going to put both cav models over where I put that green dot. So basically right on the 24-inch line, and they're going to be decently close to that eastern objective. So that is my deployment. And then Brogir is on the other side of the house, so I have no threat of any tremor from them. And obviously, they're staying out of range of 15 inches of Brogir, so he can't drum and then tremor them. And out of 6 or 10 of his cav models and his infantry models. So that's my deployment.
All righty.
So the objectives, real quick, the objectives, since you both deployed, what's the points again for the objectives? Do you have to hold them?
The side objectives are 1 point if you have more figures near them at the end, 2 points if you have only your figures near them at the end. And I think near is 3 inches here. And then each rearward objective is just 1 point if you hold it, or if you have more figures, and then 2 points if, oh, I'm sorry, and that, I'm sorry, rear objectives are 2 points if you, 1 point if you hold it, if you hold your own. And then if you take your opponent's, it's either 2 if you have more figures or 4 if you have exclusive control.
Okay.
So what you're trying to do is you're trying to take your opponent's objective while holding your own, but holding your own is kind of weak tea points-wise.
I also forgot to mention my sentinel, which is a very important aspect of my army. My sentinel is going to be deploying with the cavalry models for now.
With the cavalry models for now. Okay. Interesting. Got it. All right. So let's figure out what we're going to do, shall we? All right. So I think... All right, Rainier, do you have any thoughts on this deployment and how it would play out here? And then we can kind of talk about what our initial initial moves are, and then we'll call it from there.
No, I do have some thoughts, actually, to be honest, but I want to wait to say them until I figure out what either of you are going to do. I'm more curious what Matt's going to do. And then I will kind of say those thoughts after I see what you're going to do.
Sounds like a plan. Okay, so... All right. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we roll priority, and whoever wins priority
is going to be quite important.
Exactly. We'll roll priority. We'll say what we're going to do on the first turn, and then we can kind of, because I think, as you say, our first turn is going to be
extrapolate from there.
Yeah. Yes. All right. So I get a 4.
I got a 4 as well. Ooh, this
all
is
right.
Tense.
Roll again. This is tension.
I got a 4 again.
I got a 4 again.
Okay. Like I got him. A 3 this time.
I got a 3 this time.
Okay.
We're keeping people on the edge of their seats.
I'm
We're
on
going
a 5.
To roll 4. I'm a 3, so go ahead.
Okay, so
my drum is going to beat. I'm going to beat the drum.
Absolutely what I did not want to happen. So this is going to make this game significantly harder for me.
I was really waiting for this to happen, because you're right, Evan.
Yeah, if I had lost priority, my chances of winning this game were quite good, I'd say, because I can react to where he puts the bulk of his army, because he has a couple options. He can either commit straight down the river or try and flank me in some way or get around in some way. And if I lost priority, I would be able to react to that and position my models exactly where I want them to be. However, because I won priority, he is going to be able to react to me, which is absolutely not what I want when I start off on the back foot. So this is going to be very challenging to do. So first things first, what I'm going to do is I'm going to basically the bulk of my army is pretty good where it is. I might spread some non-archers out a little bit more just to spread it out a bit, just to be able to cover both objectives. The size of my army is good enough that I should be able to cover both the northern and Eastern objectives, so that shouldn't be too much of a problem. I am going to, because I'm not in the need of blinding light, because the models that are going to want blinding light are probably not going to be near Galadriel. I'm basically turn one going to which of those big red blobs is the Emperor, Dad?
Oh, sorry. Here, let me put a this is the Emperor.
Yeah.
Put an E so, in the middle there.
So I might push up a little bit and then get Galadriel in range of the Emperor and just throw either a one or two dice compel just to stop Dad from advancing. And if I get it off, that's amazing. It's going to be very helpful, and it sort of resets that whole priority situation, which has a higher chance of being in my favor next turn, because he either pushes forward and loses the benefit of the Emperor for a couple turns, or he succeeds and we're back to where we started. But I'm going to throw probably a two dice compel on the Emperor, just because this is a tactical thing that I really want to happen. And
does
then,
this mean you have to go into Earth through the water, correct? Yeah. The river?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It's all 12 inches.
Yeah, it's hard to. It's not clear to me that Galadriel, where she deployed, could get within 12 inches of the Emperor.
If
but
she
maybe.
Is capable of doing that, I would.
That's my, from what I perceive right now. I don't know if compels what 12 inches.
Yes.
Yeah, I
maybe.
Don't,
maybe I don't know. I don't, she'd have to. She'd have to get very close to my front line in order to do that.
Yeah, because right now you're looking, she's I would say less than 12 inches away from the north board edge, and the Eastern Emperor is probably like 3 or 4 inches. So yeah, she'd have to be, I'd say like maybe 17 or 16 inches away. So I'm not sure. With
so I am perfectly fine with moving her forward to get her in range. I'll just cover her with guys at that point, but either that's going to happen or that's not. And if it is reasonable for me to go for that, I'm going to go for that. And then I'll just move the rest of my army 3 inches up to sort of stay relatively near her. Yeah, that's my plan with Galadriel turn one. If it goes off, if I, for some reason, cannot get in range, I'm going to just throw either I'm going to throw probably just a one dice compel on Rutabi, just to make it so if he tries to rush me, Rutabi may be out of the fight for one or two more turns than if she was not compelled. And other than that, my Sentinel is just going to try and force a Cav model to make a courage test. Depending on where are your Cav models back behind the house?
Yeah, that's where the cav models
so are. they would not be able to make the cav models make a courage test. So I think the Sentinel would just grab either the Emperor or Rutabi, whoever Galadriel also grabbed, basically just as a sort of hope that if he botches the roll, I might be able to burn more will out of him, especially if Galadriel made them burn will in the first place. Just to add a little bit of a possibility of an advantage there, because there's no real point in just grabbing a random guy, because that's not going to achieve anything. And then the Sentinel is going to run behind this rock face here, so he's got an elven cloak. And then the elves, the two elf cavalry, are going to run over this way as far as they can towards that corner. Just staying out of range of basically everything. The elves in here, as I said, are probably going to push up about 3 inches, but stay slightly outside of the river, just to force Dad through the river and engage him on my terms. And then I'm still leaving cav gaps for both Isildur and the captain to get out if they so need to. So that is my that is my first turn, or as much as I can salvage from winning priority.
Yeah. Okay. So I think what's probably going to end up happening with me is that the real question here is, what do I do with the cavalry? So I have two options here. I can send the cavalry around to my left and threaten your base with it, with the ability to kind of move around there. Or I can send my cavalry around to the right and kind of get in range to check your cavalry, run down your sentinel, and kind of come around the flank there. I think in the end, given that you've got somebody with might on you've got a captain.
Both my captain and my Isildur, by the way, repositioned to the center of the line, so he's not on the objective.
Oh, he's not on the objective there anymore. Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's interesting. All right. Well, that changes things a little bit. So I think what I may do then is, all right. So I think that's okay. So what ends up happening is my battle line repositions. So basically it's going to be squaring off against yours. So I'll put a little line here with an arrow. Some black dragons, maybe three or four, are going to head down to cover the rear objective and are probably going to position themselves behind. There's a building right by the rear objectives. They're going to position themselves behind there to hide from shooting. Cover the objective. I will likely be sending a cavalry back there to one of the cavalry back there to support, just hiding out behind a building just in case you get uppity with your cavalry or lucky with your sentinel. The Emperor and Rutabi will run up somewhere behind the center of the battle line where they can either flex left to get at your key objective or right to get at the right-hand objective. They'll be behind the central battle line right now. And this part of the battle line will head around the building. We got a little extra move here, and they're going to kind of threaten your rearwards objective. And I think my shooters are probably going to head back toward the center, just where they can be in a position to kind of threaten your cavalry and keep your cavalry from getting a little too aggressive there. And then the rest of my cav, which is going to be the drum and two other cav are going to head up and hide behind one of these buildings up toward your end of the board where they can get into a position where they can actually like be on your rear objective in one turn's drumming movement, which I think will force you to counter that problem. And I think they'll also be safe back there because they'll be hidden from compels and shooting and things like that. So I think that's my plan. My battle line basically comes up in the center to press you. My cav threatens your rearward objective along with the left-hand side of my battle line. Right-hand side of my battle line threatens the right-hand objective. And I have, kind of a handful of force back there to protect my rearward. And if I need to send other stuff over there, I can do that. I can do that later. I think I can handle two cav and a sentinel over there with forces available. We go from there. I mean, if Brorgir can get off a cheeky tremor and take some guys down, maybe take your He might be able to get into a position
turn
where
one,
he can.
I'd say probably not.
It depends where you are, but he's got, I mean, he's got 9 inches of move to move up and then 6 inches to shoot. And then he just needs to hit somebody within six inches of your guy.
I did move slightly forward. So I guess.
So anyway, he'll start, trying to.
I also have resistant to magic.
You have resistant to magic, but you know, he can still do stuff. You know, basically I think what he's trying to do is he's trying to take, the captain, either the captain or Isildur off of his horse. I think the benefit to taking to going at Isildur is he spends will, which he may want to.
Yeah.
Actually, no.
So,
yeah, he spends will, which he may want later.
If you were to do this, how many will points would you spend?
Oh, I'd only be spending one.
Yeah, because well, also you'd have to get range with.
Yeah, I'd have to get range. I mean, I don't know what he's going to do. This is not a critical strategy. This is just something to do.
So why not? Sure.
Yeah. And okay. I mean, yeah. So the other interesting thing here is we've now got two objectives by pawns. And I think I actually want the emperor to fight in the water. So, I mean, the emperor is going to end up, I think, because I think we can wrap this up and then Rainier can, you know, kind of talk through how he sees it going. But
I think we should roll for priority for turn two and then discuss what happens turn two and then.
And then, okay, so let's roll for priority on turn two. All right, we'll roll for turn two.
I rolled.
Well, actually, Rainier, any thoughts after turn one?
Yeah, I was curious what you do, Matt. I think that's exactly what I would do. Because right off the bat now, I think both of you guys see this. Matt has one objective for sure, so that's two victory points. And realistically, with the Drummond stuff, he has the back objective is not going to be taken, in my opinion, right now. And Evan's army is on the other side of the river. So I don't see, besides the cav, how it can be very quick to get any of the objectives besides those two by the river. So I think that that's what's going through my mind right now. But I'm also curious what's going to happen. And I'm scared for Matt's emperor, in a sense, because there are two victory points if Evan can kill him. But I'm pretty sure he's thinking of putting him in the river because you can't get that knockdown. Well, you still can, right?
Well, no, he can't knock the back. So the reason the emperor wants to fight in one of the pawns is Isildur's move is limited to 3 inches in the water. And the emperor doesn't care what he kills, right? He can go in and just, you know, if Evan's got ordinary guys protecting an objective, he can kill ordinary guys. Isildur has to go at the emperor, or at least wants to go at the emperor. And Isildur doesn't have the move in the water to do his thing where he like puts on the ring, runs and gets behind the emperor and traps him because he only moves 3 inches and he's going to be starting probably an inch out.
Yeah.
I think that's why the emperor wants to fight in one of those two pawns, because then it becomes very hard for Evan to get the ring induced trap.
No, that makes sense. I think so. Like the first move, I was really curious what Matt was going to do, and he did what I think was important. Now I'm really curious what Evan's going to do, and I think this roll off and like the second move, that's going to
I rolled a 5 on my priority roll.
I rolled a 1.
Okay, so at this point, I've effectively lost. It's going to be very, very challenging for me to win this game. But I am going to go through my thought process of what I'm going to do to try and salvage this. But unfortunately, two lost priority rolls in a row with the strategy I set up here, or two won priority rolls in a row with the strategy here, effectively takes away all of the advantage I was going to be able to have, just because I cannot react at all to what he's going to do. And by the way, before people comment and say, oh, if your strategy here revolves around two priority rolls, and if you, it's a 25% chance that you just lose on the spot, you should pick a different strategy. I don't think this is the case. Because if I fight him straight up, I either have to split my force across the river to guard my two objectives across the river, because they are both like on the other side of the river compared to where the main engagement would happen. And because he's got more cavalry, because he's got tremor, because he's got more models and more maneuverability from the drum, that is just a losing battle in general. And there would be no way I could break through as well if I just fight him straight up, because he's got the pike block, he's got the emperor in there, which if he keeps it safe, he can basically play very reactive with the emperor and guard things. So I think this was the strategy for me. However, now it is going to make the game very, very difficult due to these one priority rules. However, I am going to go through what I would do this turn, and then it is still a winnable game, but it is going to be a very tough game. So effectively what happens now is I can't do much with my entire army near the tents. If he had one priority, I would have been able to react, charge in, and then I would have gotten a compel off with Galadriel, and then I would have called a heroic combat, charged both my captain and Isildur into that one guy, heroic combated, and gone around to the back objective, and also sent my cavalry over there as well. And I would have basically said, he's playing conservative with the emperor because he doesn't want to lose the emperor. I am going to use my heroes, which are strong cav heroes, and I am going to just attempt to beat up that back objective and take it. I'm going to send the remainder of my cavalry over there as well, and then the sentinel is going to come up and support. And with that heroic combat, I would have also threatened a dismount from Isildur, depending on whether the emperor was in combat or not, just to try and burn might off of him. And then I would have reinforced the battle line and sort of fought on my own terms. Now I need to play much more defensively. So my cavalry will go around this building here. The board is sort of cut off there, but I'm fairly sure, right, Dad, there's board around this building.
Yeah. You can go around that building.
Yeah, so they're going around that way. They have to go the long way now. The sentinel is probably going to grab some guy over here if he has line of sight. You sent how many guys back there?
There were like three, and then the archers are heading that way too.
Okay, well, he's going to grab whoever he can that's near that objective, and then he's going to zip back here as well to stay out of line of sight. Well, to keep his elven cloak from your archers. And then unfortunately, my central army really can't do much, because whichever way I commit, Dad will immediately swarm that other objective, and I basically will never be able to get it back. So I'm just going to stay defending the river. I'm going to stay defending the river, not be touching the river, be a little bit back from it. And still have the model count to be able to have the spread to grab both of those objectives. Galadriel now definitely has the ability to throw a compel on the emperor, and she is 100% going to do that, just to attempt to slow Dad down, maybe try and reset the situation where it's more favorable for me, and just pray. Because unfortunately, this now allows him to move his cavalry models out from behind cover, and I can't react to them. It allows him to react to where my eastern flanking models are going, and it also means that we won't be engaging this turn, which is very good for him, because otherwise, if he had won priority, he would may have likely moved up across the river, and then I would have been able to engage him where I wanted to engage him. So that is my plan. It is going to be an extraordinarily challenging game. I think it's winnable, but it is going to require a lot of tricks from my end now.
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point I just press your center and I threaten the left hand objective with the cav. I kind of solidify my position around my objective, and I get set to, and you know, I start using tremors to kill stuff where I can. And if I can get, I may be able to get Burger into a position where I can just kind of shoot down lines of elves and kill them. And then I think, I try and lean on your objective, because that's actually not, that's going to be a hard position for you to defend there, because to get to protect your objective, because of where, so his objective is sitting kind of between a pond and a tent, and I can, and the pond is connected to another small pond by just a stream that I can pass over fairly easily. So there's not a lot of depth to Evan's position, and getting his heroes in there to defend that objective is going to be really tough. This is Evan's back objective. So I think, yeah, I'm probably going to end up trying to press toward that. I think I can probably take that, still threaten his other right-hand objective, and still, you know, I can keep one guy back to take the left-hand objective, and then my rearward objective, I think I've got enough to contest. Unless Evan decides to, you know, commit and send his heroes over to take the rearward objective. And I almost think that if he does, I just let him have that, and I take his objective and try and kill the rest of his army. That may be the way to deal with that problem, but we won't see how it works out, but it would be interesting to see how it works out.
I think we can do very brief, like, closing thoughts of, like, what we do for the remainder of the game, and then
let's hear a closing argument from Rainier. But
sure,
you guys want me to give it?
Yeah, go ahead and give it.
Okay, like the verdict on who I think would take it.
Well, I mean, any closing thoughts you might have?
Closing thoughts that I had with you guys, I think both of you guys would play it exactly how I would too, as well, where it is when it comes to this point in the game. I think Matt just pushing forward is a really good idea, because again, he would contest those two on Evan's side. And I think the lake really, really is going to play a big part in this, because it won't lend Evan the opportunity to do as much killing as he needs to do, if that makes sense. I think also Evan's in a hard position, because if he wants to get Matt's objective, he does have to commit one or two heroes to it. And wherever he commits the hero, Matt can push with the drum or push with his models in the opposite direction. So I think those are my closing ideas. I do like Evan's cav contingent flanking, and I like the idea of him hiding behind the building and just kind of being like, whenever he wants, end of the game or whatever, I mean, their cav, he can jump into the fray to get the back objective. But yeah, those are my thoughts. I think, yeah, the two roll-offs took a big factor, the deployment took a big factor, and the reactions of each player took a big factor. But I'll let you guys say more before I make my verdict.
I actually have a question for Evan, and that's, did you consider just deploying opposite me and punching me in the face turn one? And if not, why not? Okay, so tell me why not.
I discussed this briefly on turn one, but I'll discuss it again now. There are a couple of things. So if I deploy in your face, I cannot defend those back two objectives. I am simply incapable of doing so. I can't defend the one on the east, and I can't defend the one in the north, because there is a river between me and that, and that is going to be much easier for you to deal with than me to deal with. It is also going to be significantly more challenging for me to even contest your back objective. Because now, because I've deployed my army central, I need to get over the river, and I need to get past that tent on the eastern side, which is going to be much more challenging for me to do. And I would have to, if I wanted to even try to contest that western objective, I would have to split my force, which means that my banner is only going to be effective in one area, and your banner is going to be effective in all of the areas. and you, due to your drum, are better able to reposition your back line to take advantage of my split force. So I'd either have to, I would probably, to be safe, have to just leave that Western objective and try to contest it later on in the game, which means I am basically giving you all of the objectives, or giving you a decent chance to get all of the objectives. And due to the speed I know at which you play, and with the precision I know that which you play with, I do not have the time to be able to simultaneously break you and get to all of the objectives before we run out of time. I'm not saying you slow play. I am saying that you do not play ludicrously quickly.
Because that's what I heard you say.
I mean,
Evan was like, do it to yourself. I'm like, oh, it's really polite. Then I'm like, wait. Is he... No, but I know what you mean, though, Evan. I know what you mean. And I like that you're giving a
You are a very contemplative player, Dad. And that is a good thing. You do not purposely slow play.
Due to the slow pace of my elderly brain.
I know. Yes, due to that. I know that when I play you, I need to come up with a plan to get to the objectives quickly. And then I can be okay. And unfortunately, my original plan, which is going to be very challenging now that you lost those two priority roles, was going to be, I basically feint the fact that I'm going to threaten the Emperor, and then I go around to your back objective, clear that out with my heroes and my cav models, and then put a little bit of pressure on the side objectives, and then basically just contest the other two objectives, possibly win the eastern one, depending on how it goes, but at least get one model in range of the northern one, and then I am in a winning position from there, is the thought process. But now that I have sadly won the two priority roles, it is going to be a bit more challenging for me to get to that back objective, which is really going to be the deciding factor in this match, because they're extremely valuable points-wise. I'm not going to be able to get there. And what is going to end up happening is we are going to grind each other down. I'd say probably we'd have 4-ish turns of combat, maybe 5, just because we're both going to be doing a lot of positioning, casting spells, putting models into precise places, which means that one of us might break, but it is entirely possible that with all of the positioning we've done in these early turns, neither of us will break, and then it will come down exclusively to objectives. So it's going to be dependent on whether or not I can get my cav heroes around to that back objective or not. If I can't, then I think the game is Dad's entirely. If I can, I think I've got quite a good shot at winning. So that's my final analysis of the position.
All right. Rhaenyra, your final thoughts?
On who I think would take it?
Well, your final thoughts.
Well, my final I think Evan said it quite just spot on. You know what I mean? But with that said, I think it's a little more of an uphill battle for you, Evan. I think you acknowledge that. You lay out a good strategy. You're doing the whole, as a good player, you're like, okay, it's going against me, or at least I can think 4 or 5 turns ahead to realize it's going to go against me towards the end. And you're doing what I think is smart, which is to go for the back objective. I just think Matt has more, I guess this is good to tie in why the Easterlings are so strong, but I think he has more, I don't know, his army is going to always be together. So he can push with the movement where it's going to be together. He can, because even if that, he could even push the Emperor and everything towards Enrutabi and Beauregir towards Galadriel, and then have like an opportunity to even wound or kill Galadriel. So there are these variables, and some of them go one way, some of them go another way. But I think just percentage-wise, it's more of an uphill battle for Evan, with all the things that he's outlined. And I think the Easterlings also, this is a, it perfect example to show Easterlings can play with the scenery really well. And I think that riverbed or the pools, it's like three little ponds or whatever. I think that proves it perfectly because the Easterlings can, I mean, you're in a perfect castle position, right, Evan? Even though you're not castling, you even have like the opportunity to move around it, but that would be a perfect castling position for anyone. But the Easterlings make that backfire because they can push so forward, because in the initial shooting, you might take out maybe three or four. That's where I'm hitting. And you have basically one option, Evan. And based on your decision, Matt can have like two or three options and go either way with it. So that's kind of why I'm like, ooh, I think this is an uphill battle for you.
Well, I guess my final thought is that I think Evan's best strategy is to bend the knee and swear fealty to the emperor. And I think that, frankly, is everyone's best strategy.
Yeah.
Pay homage to your
I think this game was very reflective of a couple of very interesting things that we probably haven't, well, one of them we probably have covered, but we haven't really covered enough, which is A, and the first thing that listeners probably notice, which is the sheer importance of losing priority in the early game and just how impactful that is on these types of games. Because losing priority twice in a row really allows Dad to sink the boot in, basically. And it gives him all of the freedom in the world to be able to place his models exactly where he thinks they need to be and react to where my models are. Oftentimes when you are using an army that outshoots your opponent and you're staying back, a lot of the game will be dictated by who wins priority and who loses priority. And I think another thing this shows is that Easterlings can win basically anything. Even if we're playing the army that supposedly has this advantage over the Easterlings and will win in a straight up fight, because the Easterlings have extremely powerful offensive magic, good heroes, and extremely good maneuverability and the ability to stack pikes, they can basically be everywhere and nowhere all at once. And that is extremely challenging for even seasoned players to be able to account for. And it forces your opponent to play extremely passively. The reason I castled up there is because the previous times when I've played against Dad's Easterlings, his favorite thing to do against me is to call the drum and then place the entirety of his army on one flank of my army and then just murder that flank. And there is not much you can do about that in a more open position. So I really needed the refused flanks there to not have him get the jump on me and just eat my army alive. For you guys aspiring to play against the Easterlings and win, they always have a chance and you should never get comfy around them.
Or just don't try to beat them and try to play them.
That's true. If you can't beat them, join them.
Bend the knee.
No, but it is curious. So I like, so for example, I have a tournament here coming up in the Netherlands, and it's a zero legions pure 700 point. And I was like, oh, this is going to be quite interesting. And like, naturally my only army that I have, that's my paint project that I brought to Holland, are the Easterlings. So I'm going to bring a non-legion pure Easterling list to 700 points. And I've been really like,
interested. Are you taking Kamul?
I was going to say, Kabul's over in the corner going, what about me? Take me.
That's an ugly day. I'm not bringing that. No, I'm bringing solely what I have models for. So I have all the metal ones, these old school boys.
I'm cheap on eBay. Take me.
Just get like a little toy dragon and glue them to the base. No, but it makes me curious. And seeing also like Matt's reaction and your fighting to it. And you said it perfectly, Evan, like the idea that you can just throw a big chunk on the flank is just, I don't know. I'm going to have fun with the movement. I probably won't do well with them because I haven't played in quite a while, but it is quite interesting to see most of, I think actually the whole game, if you're just analyzing like this, came down to placement, roll-offs for movement, and who did what in movement. And I think that just like speaks truth to what the Easterlings are. They win in the movement phase.
All right. Well, hope you've enjoyed this and hope it's been a little illuminating. We will see you again soon on an unexpected podcast. Also, let us know what you thought of this format, whether you thought this was a fun and interesting format, because we can do different armies and different versions of this and really kind of, you know, break down how they would be used on a table and how they would be used against different army types. And we thought this might be an interesting new way to present the podcast. We'll still be obviously doing other types of episodes in the podcast as well, but thought this would be an interesting way to really deep dive into an army and show how it's used on the table. So let us know.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Vote, guys. Vote in your comments who you think would win.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Vote for the Emperor. Bend the knee.
Bend the knee. See you guys.
Bye-bye.